Adventures in Collecting is about toys, but it might not be for your children, especially if you don't like words like f**k or sh**.
Are you ready, kids? Get your parents' permission, check your mailbox, and grab your shopping cart. It's time for the Adventures in Collecting podcast.
I'm Eric.
And I'm Dave.
Welcome to Adventures in collecting,
where we talk toy news, culture, and hauls,
along with our journeys as collectors.
And welcome back to Adventures in Collecting. Here we are, Dave. We're here for another episode. We're back.
We're here. Hello.
I always love the energy. I look forward to it every other week. I wait for that just kind of like never-ending source of abundant energy.
Everyone, whenever we're back in public, is going to be like, you are actually more interesting than you come across. And I'm going to be like, well, yeah, I think.
There's a lot. You hide it a lot. You hide it behind the beard. That's where it lives.
Oh, yeah.
So, like usual, Dave, when we have a special guest, there's absolutely no reason to bury the lead here. Today we have Peter Gorel, better known as the artist behind Killer Bootlegs. And he has been at the forefront of the bootleg toy movement for quite some time now. So with his creation, Phantom Star Killer, achieving iconic status in the toy world, we are happy to welcome Peter to the show. Peter, thank you for joining us on Adventures in Collecting.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks for coming aboard.
Yeah, thanks, Dave.
So, Peter, before we get started, the first thing that we like to ask all of our guests, because this is a show about toy collecting, what are you collecting right now?
Well, I'm currently trying to collect the retro G.I. Joe 3.75 wave, first wave, or second wave, I guess they're on already, having some trouble getting them. They haven't shown up around here really. Here and there, they kind of do. I don't like them necessarily, but I feel like I need them as like a lifelong G.I. Joe fan. But so those, I guess.
So you don't like them, or is it because they're not like the O-ring style, or what's the gripe with the retro line?
I wish they were O-ring or not just modern sculpts on retro packaging and called retro. You know, it's just, to me, they look like it could have been on a modern package. It could have been another toy. I mean, it is, you know.
Yeah. And I think that's been kind of the majority of the complaints, aside from not being able to find them. I mean,
yeah,
you know, here in New Jersey, Dave, I know I've seen them a grand total. I've seen Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow once on like an end cap, and I don't think I've seen them since. I don't know if you've seen them at all.
I feel like I've seen Baroness once.
I never saw any of the first three. The last, like Roadblock, Scarlet, and Destro. I found a case of the other day, and I was super excited because I follow you guys and watch how you go to the stores. I do the same here in Illinois, bouncing to different stores, you know, on my errands every day. And I'm always looking, and the only time I ever luck out is when I can catch somebody early in the morning before they've stocked the shelves and the boxes are still sealed, and they have a pallet of all the boxes from Hasbro, Mattel, and I sit there and, you know, kind of pick through the boxes. I've been yelled at a few times and told to get away, but generally they will let me, you know, open a box and take something out. And I was so excited thinking I'd finally found Storm Shadow and Snake Eyes, because those are the only two I really honestly give a shit about. But I cracked the box open and it was a bunch of Scarlets and Destros and Roadblocks, and I just put them back on the shelf for somebody else, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, it's a cool line in idea. Like, I personally, I'm into the I'm starting to get into a little bit of the classified line with them, the 6-inch figures. I just think like the kind of weapon system that they have and the way that like they can hold everything at once, like they're really I find that really clever. But I do like with this retro line, at least, that they're using the original artwork. And, you know, it's just nice to see like that kind of style of toy back on the shelves again.
Yeah, I just wish they were more like the ones that I collected that are now, you know, falling apart from, I guess, O-ring rot.
Yeah, you know, when Hasbro put out their Star Wars retro line a couple years ago and then followed it up this year with the Empire Strikes Back line, I thought that those hit the nail on the head. You know, it's, you know, that's what people want. You know, I don't think, you know, a modern toy on a retro package, they've just been doing that forever. We've had so many versions of the modern versions of these toys. I, you know, it's insane. So to be able to get something and have, you know, I mean, that you're not tiptoeing around or having to put on a shelf and stare at where you can take it open, play with it, you know, or have a carded version of a figure that you otherwise wouldn't be able to get, I think is very cool.
Yeah, and you know, with that Star Wars retro line too, the idea that they were putting out figures that never came out in that retro style was cool. Like the fact that you could get the Tarkin figure that came with the board game, like that. I feel like that plays to a market like very well, right? Because you can continue the collection that you started 40 years ago.
100%. I think that they should do all of the characters from the prequels, sequels, and anything in between that they didn't have a chance to make from 77 to 85, you know? And I think, just think if there was like a Cobra Commander figure from the G.I. Joe movie where he's like half man, half snake. Like if they put that out, how well would that do? You know?
Yeah. And I mean, it's, you know, we're now we're speaking into, you know, your wheelhouse, right? So
right.
The retro aspect of this stuff, you know, clearly has inspired collectors all over and has inspired this entire community of bootleg toys. But tell us a little bit about how these retro toys really kind of inspired what you do.
Okay, so I've always collected toys, you know. I was born in 85, so I kind of missed the Star Wars boom, but my grandma was like an avid garage saler. So she would go to garage sales every day and pick up the toys that people who were 10 years older than me were now desperately trying to get rid of because they, you know, were starting to get hair in their armpits and wanted to talk to girls and shit. So they were done with Star Wars. But my grandma took to collect them all kind of literally and would just get them everywhere, every garage sale she went to. And so I kind of amassed this collection of figures that I really had no business playing with or having. And I just kept playing with them. And then when I grew out of kind of playing with toys, I just started putting them on shelves and then getting them on in package and keeping them in package. And, you know, so yeah, it was kind of always action figures. It always played a big role in my life. And as I got older, when I had my daughter, she just turned 13 the other day, I was looking for kind of like a hobby to keep me busy doing something, you know, when I'm at home. And I hadn't done art in a number of years since high school, really. I did a bunch of art classes in high school and was always really talented, but I just lost sight of my passion for art. And in this pursuit to find a hobby, I started going through my action figures and finding ones that were broke or that I had doubles of or triples or quadruples of, and would then, you know, boil and pop them and take them apart, and just started making kind of weird mashup toys and different characters and different pop culture reference things, mashing two things together. And I started putting them in, just doing this for myself. This was kind of, so this was like before social media, and I was just doing them, and friends of mine would come over and see them and say, hey, we're having, you know, or this other buddy of mine's curating this art show at this bar next week. Why don't you put some of these things in there, you know? So I started doing that around town locally and was putting these creations that I was making, more one-of-a-kind sculptures at the time, that were made of action figures or action figure based or incorporating action figures in some way. And they started selling, and I would want to make another one because of I at the end of the day, everything I make, I'm making for myself. This is something that I want. You know, a lot of times I'm making it because it's something that I want and I want to see made. So these things, I would put them in shows and then they'd sell, and I'd be like, gosh, now I got to remake this thing. You know, like I'd have to like go find out some of these. And I was using rarer and more rare figures. I've always kind of done that in my work, tried to use things that, you know, there used to be kind of this rule back when, back in the early days of kind of bootlegging 10 plus years ago, where you, if you used a part, it was kind of something that, you know, you were using and it was kind of your thing. And now it's kind of a free for all with so many guys doing it, but I digress. So I had to keep remaking these things that I was making. And a buddy of mine told me that I could, he was working in some factory that was doing some mold making procedure in some way of making multiples of parts, small parts. And he just kind of explained the mold making process, or just molding and casting, kind of injection molding, or just like that whole process to me of making multiples. And I started doing research online and found articles about mold making and silicone molds and resin casting. And it was all in regards to other crafts and stuff. And I just kind of geared that towards what I was doing and just taught myself how to make molds of everything and taught myself how to make casts, and then slowly but surely started hand painting them and making the packaging and doing all the different aspects that go into making an action figure and trying to make it as good as I can, you know? So, and when I started doing that, you know, I was, social media happened, of course, and I started posting these things online, and they would get shared here and there, and, you know, different Star Wars collecting groups and sites on Facebook and such. And I was starting to get compared to this character, the Suck Lord, that looks like the Suck Lord made it. And then I was like, who's this guy, you know, or what's the Suck Lord? So I Googled that and saw his stuff. And I was like, there's some guy who's doing the same thing as me. Like, this is pretty wild, you know? And so when I realized that there was another guy doing it, I wanted to do everything the opposite, complete opposite of what he was doing. So if it was going to suck, and his whole aesthetic was that it was like some back alley bootleg thing that you could find in Chinatown, like, I wanted my stuff to be killer and have it be cool and the best that it can be, like the cream of the crop. And I've always strived for my stuff to be the best. And I've always tried to excel and one up myself, or one ups, you know, if some new guy comes on the scene and he's making toys, you know, that I'm going to make something that just blows his socks out of the water, and or whatever, you know, it's like, it's friendly competition in some ways. And so, yeah, I've just always kind of progressed. And Starkiller at the time, 2013, that was kind of my go big or go home moment. I had always sat back at the sidelines and behind a computer screen and watched San Diego Comic-Con happen. And just, you know, looked at the exclusives and tried to get them, or tried to find somebody to mule it or buy it on eBay, or all the stuff that everybody does. You know, it's like this show that you don't go to, that you watch from home, you know, on G5 or whatever the fuck that channel's called or whatever, but you don't go to San Diego Comic-Con. So I got the opportunity from a close friend of mine now, but at the time, he was a stranger, and that was Dove Kellimer, the owner of DKE Toys. And he asked me to make a figure for him. He had been watching what I was doing, and now he has his DKE Con, and it's all bootleg toys and all these guys that me and the Suck Lord have inspired to make these toys, you know. And but at the time, it was all vinyl, designer vinyl toys that he was selling. And like, it'd be like some Suck Lord toy and some Skinner resin toy, and then my toy. And I wanted to do something that I thought was, you know, so different that it would stand out, I guess. And at the time, you know, nobody was really doing hand-painted figures. It was kind of like what Sucklor does, casting it in a solid color and splashing it with paint, or casting it in two colors and a swirl, kind of like David Healy does, or some of these other, you know, bootleg artists at the time, with minimal painting and just kind of playing more with the additives like glitter and glow in the dark and the colors you can get just dyeing the resin. And I was like, well, I'm going to hand paint this thing and just do something that's one up from everything that's being done or anything. And so I gave him, tried to put his, integrate as many bells and whistles as I could to the figure, you know, by giving him a telescoping lightsaber that was hand cast and giving him a vinyl cape that was all hand cut, you know, with this jagged pattern that made it look like it was tattered. And I collaborated with a friend of mine, Luke Yates, to do original artwork that was based on the toy that I was making. And we made this package that was, you know, not like photocopied pictures like Sucklord might have done at the time. It was, you know, fully printed artwork that was original. It was just kind of like revolutionary, I guess, for the handmade toy scene at the time, what I was doing. And it has inspired a lot of what's come after, I guess, is why it's become so iconic, I suppose, or why that figure did. I try to think about it sometimes and why that stuck out. And, you know, it's just, I never let it go. I always revisited it and made new versions of it. And it was skateboards of it and t-shirts and minifigures and different toys.
And now comic books,
but that, at the show, it sold out before I even got there at San Diego. So I didn't even know that preview night was a thing. And I just booked my ticket for that first day, I thought, because I didn't know that I had like a vendor badge or whatever that I could just get in and to that day. So I showed up the next day and they were already sold out. And so it just was kind of like a pretty cool experience to go out there and I had gone every year up until this year, where I'd have a toy released or something. And I became friends with Brian Flynn in the process, because Super 7 was always a couple boosts away from DKE. Flynn wanted to make a reaction version of it. He was always really stoked on the character and thought it was cool, you know. And when the time was right, we put out the reaction figure in 2018.
Well, I mean, it's one of those things where not only the design of the character, you know, with the popping colors and, you know, the bright oranges and greens and, you know, like the character stands out, you know, but it also kind of plays at the nostalgic and maybe even aesthetic appeal of like so many different things, right? So like you have the iconography of the Kenner Star Wars toys, which there might not be a more famous toy than Kenner Star Wars toys. Like it's just the kind of the way that it is. If there is one that's more iconic, maybe it's a He-Man toy. So you put a you put a green skeleton face on like basically Obi-Wan's body.
Yeah.
It like, you know, you are playing up to what could arguably be the most nostalgic slash iconic looking toy ever.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's one of those things where I can remember, you know, so Dave and I have only been doing this podcast. We just celebrated our 1 year anniversary of doing it, but you know, we've been collecting toys for pretty much our entire lives. You know, Dave going back to, you know, being around for those Return of the Jedi Kenner figures, right, Dave? That was
I was definitely caught the end of you know, the Kenner run. I think that last, or that first Power of the Force, like Return of the Jedi kind of thing. I don't remember Power of the Force, but I do definitely remember the Jedi toys. And of course He-Man. So, and especially with that kind of aesthetic that you get from the reaction figures, which is that era. It felt like it was a perfect fit for you.
Yeah, and believe me, that was all intentional, guys. Like, I kind of took all the things that I thought were, you know, and well, actually my idea for the whole thing was, and this, it, what you said is all true, but what I did was I took kind of George Lucas's recipe for all the things that were inspirational to him, and whether, you know, it was Kurosawa films and spaghetti westerns and the seven, you know, Vietnam and medieval, you know, Greek mythology, medieval mythology, and Buck Rogers and all that stuff that was influential to him as a child. And he kind of spun it all into his own yarn and made this tale Star Wars. I just did that with everything that was influential to me, you know, Star Wars, He-Man, Disney films, you know, the Black Cauldron was a big influence on Phantom Starkiller and the character design.
One of my favorite of all time. Yeah, I was going to say there's definitely some Horned King in there.
Yeah, 100%. That's why when we, I think the fourth colorway of him was the Horned King colorway. And that was me kind of paying tribute to the inspiration that it gave me.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I was fortunate to kind of have, you know, Jedi being my first kind of exposure to Star Wars. Like I was saying, I wasn't, Power of the Force was Eric's kind of era, but there wasn't a movie at that point. It was, we were gearing up for, you know, Phantom Menace. So it's cool that there was kind of, like, he got to play with some of my old Kenners, and it was that kind of generation gap there.
Yeah, that's like I was saying, like a lot of the garage sale stuff that I was getting at that time, or like my friends, I'd go over to play G.I. Joe's, and they would have, you know, a Darth Vader case or a C-3PO case full of their older brother's figures, and we'd bust them out and, you know, have both. And it's like, I, for a while, had no idea what Star Wars was. My dad showed me like a bootleg VHS tape one night after a Halloween party, and it just kind of changed everything for me, because then I had context to what these toys that my grandma had given me were, and these toys that I was playing with at my friends' houses and my brother's friends and all their older brother's toys and shit. And yeah, it changed everything. And Star Wars kind of became a big thing for me, you know, where I would, this, like before the internet, you know, where you'd have to read the character guides and all the source books, and, you know, on the all the weapons and vehicles, and, you know, I would spend hours reading that shit and all the books and stuff, the, as I got older.
Man, even well into the 90s with, like, the, you know, the Kenner, you know, right before Hasbro Power of the Force, mm-hmm. you know, line. So like the super buff Luke Skywalker and everything. Mm-hmm. you know, even in that time, like I can remember that to this day, I only know some of the characters' names because of the back of the cards, you know, because of, you know, looking at the back of the figure and knowing, you know, what was coming in the next wave or like what was still out there. If it weren't for the toys, I think, like, and I think many people would say the same thing, the knowledge of, you know, kind of that world would fade, you know, mm-hmm. without the toy line.
100%.
Yeah, especially like you were saying, we didn't have internet. I mean, we had, like, our books were the Marvel comics for the Marvel Star Wars comics, or I think even like we were getting Dark Horse at one point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like during the Shadows of the Empire.
I love that. Shadows of the Empire, I love all that. Like, yeah. That was the first game. Well, not the first game, but the first game I, like, remember sitting and, like, not leaving until I beat it, you know, in one sitting.
And that game was fucking hard, too.
Yeah, I love that game. I tried to play it on an emulator not too long ago and was like, Jesus Christ.
Yep. It's like, oh, games used to control like this? Ew.
Yeah.
Or like Dark Forces.
Oh, like Dark Forces, Rogue Squadron, all those games. I love that.
It was like Doom with Star Wars.
Yeah.
So there have been many, many iterations now of Phantom Starkiller and Count Draco Knuckle Duster.
Yeah.
And this past weekend at Virtual New York Comic Con, which we're still getting used to, like, this whole virtual thing. It's just, it's the worst, but it's totally necessary. Mm-hmm. you revealed two more iterations. So, you know, one of the things that you had mentioned briefly before was kind of like really thinking and focusing on the design and the color and everything. How do you go about deciding what these special editions of the figures are going to look like? Like, how do you land on these incredible color patterns and designs?
Well, the two that were released this past weekend are both original versions that I came up with years ago. So the very first, before it was even Phantom Starkiller, I think it was in 2012 when I first made the molds that birthed the Phantom Starkiller figure. I casted it in a clear resin and airbrushed it, I think, like a smoky gray color with some translucent paint, and painted his eyes red and gave him a red sword and a black chest box and a see-through gray cape and called him the smoked out Phantom. And that was one of the first figures that I released in 2012, but it was when I had started doing toys kind of full time and was making this transition from working in a factory for barely over minimum wage to doing toys full time. And that one sold out while I was at work and kind of made up my mind for me. And so it was cool to kind of go back and, you know, do a version of Starkiller that pays tribute to that original smoked out Phantom and how far that character's come, man, you know. And Knuckle Duster, that was his other alternate colorway when so in 2015 I collaborated with a company called Terror of Planet X Skateboards, and they commissioned Alexis Zurit to do a of Knight Riders, or not Knight Riders, is it Knight Riders? Space Riders fame, the comic book Space Riders that's Black Mask Comics. He did a Starkiller and Knuckle Duster skateboard for Terror of Planet X. And they were like, okay, we've got one color way of him, which was the classic purple and yellow for Knuckle Duster. And he was like, come up with an alternative one. So I was like, all right. And I just, you know, I always look at color palettes, you know, and what colors go good together and what colors are eye-catching. You know, that's what I did with Starkiller initially with the orange. I looked up what color is most attractive to men's eyes between ages like 18 to 35 or something like that. So I got you motherfuckers mentally.
Well, he sure did.
But that's the truth. And then I looked at what colors on the color wheel were, you know, that complement those, that color, and that was green. And, you know, I just started playing with it from there and just made his color palette. And I always kind of do certain things like that. And, you know, so yeah, that's, but that's kind of where it came up with. Knuckle Dusters is another one of his like classic colorways. So I, you know, for his second version, I had to do the OG, you know, the second original colorway.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that's always so interesting about these, the variants too, is the card art. So, you know, especially, you know, with Super 7 and the reaction line, you know, it's, I open everything. Everything. I have nothing mint on card, but the reaction line, I actually like, I very meticulously take an X-Acto and cut the bubble off so that way I can keep the card nice, with hopes of one day that I will have enough space to display, you know, all the cards, because they are gorgeous. And specifically, we were talking about this a little bit before we hit record this evening, but the art on the Phantom Starkiller with the like foiled, you know, element to it is just the coolest.
Yeah. Yeah. So Beast, me and Beast Rec, have been, we worked on that together, and, that was a cool process to, you know, figure out how to incorporate the holographic glitter foil cardstock into his artwork. And it just looks great with the glittery star color or star killer color. It's kind of a mouthful. The glittery star killer colorway. Yeah. Yeah, it looks great. But yeah, they Super 7 gives me a lot of range to do whatever I want, really, within the realm of card art and packaging. So yeah, me and Jared had did a B-Strike had did a piece for the Skeleton Faces and Laser Swords art show I did at Toy du Jour last year, and he just killed it, and he did such a good job, and I love his style. His stuff is just so awesome, and yeah, getting the opportunity to work with B-Strike is great, and he's a great dude. And for Knuckle Duster's card, that's Joseph Schmalke, my partner from the Starkiller comic book. This is his third card back. And, yeah, he killed it, man. He does a great job with my characters. Joe's always, doing a really great job with my characters. And, he's got a lot of practice drawing them over and over from that comic book, I tell you what. So he could probably do them blindfolded in his sleep, you know?
And the thing I like about that card art, too, is it reminds me of, like, you know, it could be, like, one of those 80s vending machine stickers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with the, and I think that's, like, it speaks to the kind of nostalgia vibe of the figure itself.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, we were definitely looking at references. I was typing in all types of weird, you know, things, you know, the products that were made back in the 80s and 90s to see how they incorporated the paper to the, you know, printing.
Yeah, it's amazing. So you mentioned the comic book. So we know that the comic book is coming.
Yeah.
Tell us more.
Yeah, so they're all printed and they've been getting delivered, so anybody who's ordered them should be getting them any, I guess, day now. So yeah, we did a Phantom Starkiller comic book with Scout Comics under their Black Caravan imprint that my partner on the comic, Joe Schmalke, is the co-publisher with Rich Woodall. And yeah, the comic turned out great. It was an awesome project. I got to stretch my wings a little bit and do some writing on the project. I wrote the whole thing and colored the whole thing, and Joe drew the whole thing, and it was a really cool process, the way we worked on it, because I'd never written a comic before, and a lot of this was kind of outlined on the card backs, you know, that I had written in 2013 and 2014 for Knuckle Duster and Starkiller. And it was kind of weaving those storylines into us that were already established and have been established for a long time, and kind of weaving them and weaving a story into those storylines, backstories, I suppose, and kind of dancing around within there, you know. And in the comic, there's a flashback that goes through kind of a brief history of Starkiller, the whole story of what happens on the back of the card back. So every time anybody's bought in one of the Phantom Starkillers, they've seen on the back of the card, there's a story that is the same backstory I wrote in 2013. And that plays out over a few pages during the story. And so I think a lot of people will like that. And, you know, it kind of then jumps back into a more fast-paced kind of hack and slash comic.
Yeah, that was going to be my question about the book, because, like, you know, the character has the backstory on the back of the card. Like, that's, you know, that's what we know about him. You know, did you enjoy the opportunity to kind of take that story and run with it and really kind of give him, you know, a much richer tale?
Oh yeah, of course. I actually wrote so much that that it were I've been breaking it up into the second comic that we're doing. I'm real long-winded, I suppose, in the way I write, and I was writing it actually to be kind of more descriptive and, you know, describing things that you obviously couldn't, show, or I guess you could show, but I was describing it to Joe so when he was drawing it, that he could see what I was really thinking and how I was thinking and how even the room was lit. And if there was, you know, just so many details that I wrote into it, and a lot of it had to be edited way down to make dialogue for a comic and to make panels and everything. And, it was great, to be able to tell the broader tale kind of, and just a segment of it. I mean, this is really just the beginning, guys. I mean, this comic that's coming out is just one mission that he goes on, you know? And I've got a lot outlined for a lot more stuff. And hopefully, you know, hopefully that it can, you know, someday be presented a different multimedia format, whether it be a movie or a animated film or an animated short, animated series, you know.
Do you see this character going into any other mediums? And if there are, like, you know, it sounds like you're already planning for it, but you know, are there any in particular like that? Because again, like, it's just with the iconography of this character and the way that this character looks, and especially like now with how popular nostalgia is. I mean, I think to an extent nostalgia is always popular, whether it's, you know, in the 80s people were nostalgic about the 50s, and like now we're, you know, people are nostalgic about the 70s and 80s again. It's just kind of like there's always that circle, right? And I feel like now with the popularity of the character, like now would be the time, like I could totally see an Adult Swim show, you know, where it's even like Aqua Teen format, where they're like 12-minute episodes, right? Like, I could totally see a Phantom Starkiller show like that.
Yeah, so can I, and I hope that we do someday. You know, I've been working on stuff. You know, that's about all. I don't want to say too much. I don't want to say too little, but, you know, we're definitely working on stuff, and you know, I hope that you know, everybody's ready when the boom comes, because it's coming, boys.
Oh man.
Well, exciting to hear.
Speaking of the boom, you also had, as if there weren't enough things for you to be talking about this weekend, you had an additional announcement.
Yeah.
A change to your title. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you're doing with Scout?
Okay. It's hard to contain myself, but it was hard to contain myself for this long. But yeah. So Scout Comics, the comic company that put out Phantom Starkiller, is starting a toy company, like a sister company called Tracker Collectibles. It's going to be like the toy biz to their Marvel, whereas Tracker will have exclusive rights to all the IPs that Scout, Black Caravan, and Scoot currently have publishing and merchandising deals with, and producing toys, collectibles, action figures, games, all types of stuff that we've been talking about working on.
And you are going to be...
the CEO. So I guess I'm in charge. It's kind of cool. Yeah.
Congratulations. Officially, congratulations. This is amazing news.
Yeah. Pretty crazy.
Yeah, that's awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, and they and Scout, you know, they have so many IPs. So you have quite the sandbox to play in there.
Yeah, of course. There's so many great titles from Metal Shark Bro, Stabity Bunny, Gut Ghost, Electric Black, The Mall, Phantom Starkiller. There's quite a few. that we're going to have some fun making some toys, some really cool toys out of.
Yeah, I'm actually refreshing my memory right now, scrolling through the list. There is a lot of toyetic things that you have to play with here. So yeah, we're very excited to see what happens with that, because it's also been a little bit since there has been kind of like a toy company directly linked to a comic book company. I mean, the most recent one, and unfortunately they just went under, was DC Direct, producing toys for DC Comics, but there really isn't that kind of relationship anymore. And hopefully this will kind of spur some things to come.
Yeah, I think that that me coming from the more of the designer toy world and lower run, higher collectability products, that this kind of lends itself to the clientele of what Scout already has. These are higher end comics that are lower run and not Superman, Spider-Man, and that have rabid fan bases, and all have independent fan bases and popularity. So I think that to do some things that aren't so ambitious, like let's say DC Direct would do, and make 5,000 units or something, or 10,000. I don't know what they were making of their toys, but they, apparently were losing their ass on toys that are some of the most beloved characters. So they're doing something wrong.
Yeah. I think too, the thing is, some of those DC Direct products were gorgeous that they were putting out. I think, and it seems to kind of be the general consensus, is that, Warner Brothers, kind of bought DC, and there was a big like shakeup with how they were structured and everything, and there's still a lot of that DC Direct product that's still up in the air. Like, people don't know if like the stuff that they've announced is even going to come out. If there's a lot of question marks right there with that. But to your point, I think kind of harnessing that indie and collector culture that and kind of have been operating in for so long is huge. I think that's a really smart way to enter into that venture.
Yeah. And that's the way we're looking at it. And just want to make cool stuff for cool people of cool properties,
I think that's the way to go about it for sure. I think you're right on.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, it taps into the collectability for sure.
So, what's next? So what's next for you? So you have all of this, this incredible stuff that you just announced. You're starting a new company. You have the future of Phantom Starkiller. Now that we're kind of like out of con season, virtual or otherwise, what's the next step for you? What can we expect to see next?
So I'm working on the next comic book, which is going to be a Draco Knuckle Duster focused story. And I'm also working on, and that Knuckle Duster comic will also be with Joseph Schmelke under Black Caravan. And then I'm also working on a children's book for Scoot, which is Scout's imprint for 4 to 12 year olds. So this is going to be a children's book called Lil Starkiller.
Yes.
With C.P. Wilson, who was an artist that also made art for the Skeleton Faces and Laser Swords Starkiller group show last year. and he has this Winnie the Pooh meets Where the Wild Things Are style that he does. And he did like 20 images of Phantom Starkiller, Draco Knuckleduster, Vice Admiral Acre, and Absolute Ruler Thuban, all kind of doing these cute Winnie the Pooh type things. And so when Scout announced Scoot and a couple weeks ago, I talked with James Hake, the president of Scout, and the creator of Stabbity Bunny, Richard, who is heading up Scoot. And we just all decided, yeah, it was a no-brainer to follow it up and do a children's book. Because, you know, I mean, I have children. I don't know about you guys, but
I have a five-year-old. So.
A lot of the guys that collect my stuff and that are fans of Phantom Starkiller all have children, and I do too. And, you know, I think to have something to share with your kids and, you know, have this that you can share with your passion with them and, you know, your love for this character with your children and, you know, have something that you can bond over is a great thing. I know when the Star Wars books came out 5-6 years ago that were like Goodnight, Little Vader,
that's exactly what I was thinking about.
Yeah.
Yep.
I remember getting those for my kids and reading them, and those being the books that I would gravitate towards when it came to reading time at, you know, bedtime, and all the books that I went and found, you know, at thrift stores and stuff that were all Star Wars or Ewoks books, and, you know, these old books that I think, you know, my character would fit nicely into, especially with, you know, CP's work, man. Like, they're just so good. When he did the show, like, right last year, even before we knew that there was publishing that we could get for the book, we were already like, we gotta figure out a way to make this a children's book, you know? And yeah, so that's gonna happen. That'll come out next year, early next year. And that'll be, you know, and be able to be bought in bookstores because Scout just signed a big deal with Simon & Schuster for distribution and for books and stuff. So, yeah, that's something I want to be able to, people to just be able to go into Barnes & Nobles and buy, or, you know, something like that. And, yeah, so I've got that, toys, you know, just design the next figure, hopefully, for the reaction line. There's some more reaction stuff coming. Yeah, I mean, I'm still going to be doing my killer bootlegs, my, like, independent stuff as well, handmade, you know, probably lower run, kind of like what I've been doing with the reissues of Starkiller, just, like, low run, handmade stuff here and there, and, you know, yeah, I'm going to keep busy.
It sure sounds like it. But, you know, I love the idea of you doing a kid's book, because, you know, my daughter, you know, loves going over the toys with me and, you know, the collection. And I'm actually looking at it right now. I just got that that carbon freezing chamber playset from Hasbro. And I actually have I have Phantom Starkiller up there with Darth Vader right now. I'm staring at him. And my daughter is always like, you know, 'cause she watches the movies and everything with us. She's like, who's the orange guy? I don't remember him from the movie.
That's funny.
I'm like, oh, that's Darth Vader's friend from another galaxy. He's just hanging out.
And I was just thinking, like, it, you know, Goodnight Little Vader is just like, just thinking of that has me fired up for, like, you know, gifting the book, because I thought Goodnight Little Vader was hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah, we have all of them.
Yeah, all of those Star Wars, and they've actually been doing them with the some of the Marvel characters too. Like we have like a Good Night Baby Groot one that's hilarious. Cool. There's one that's like Dave, what's the one that you got for her? It's like Grow Up Ant-Man.
Grow Up Ant-Man.
And it's like Ant-Man and his daughter Cassie, and like he's basically playing a joke, like how big can he grow? And it teaches you like big and small, and it's adorable. But yeah, like all of those ideas, taking these characters that are, you know, meant and kind of now for a older audience, making them accessible for kids, I think is the best. It's just the best.
Yeah.
Before we let you go, the other thing we like to ask all of our guests is, what is the weirdest or your favorite piece in your collection? Like what fills that category?
For both.
It will check off both of those marks in one answer.
All right.
So maybe 3 or 4 years ago, I acquired unpainted, unassembled Storm Shadow Polish bootleg that was not on the card back or anything. So I have a Polish card as well that's not used. It's like a mint card. I had two of them actually. But I collect Polish bootlegs, and this is like a Storm Shadow Polish bootleg that's not assembled. So it's still like on the sprue and it's not painted. And I sent that to not AFA, but the other one, CGA, or no, that's comics. But what's that other collector grading?
The great, I can't think of the acronym right now.
Me neither.
You know who I mean, though.
Yes, yeah.
You mean, though. Yeah.
Sorry, guys, for not shouting you out.
It's been a long week.
But yeah, so I have it graded, and it's, like I said, next to like a unused card. And I think it's like a one of one. Like, I don't think that's like something that other people have. So it's like the version 2 Storm Shadow from 88, but it's a Polish bootleg of him that's unpainted, unassembled, 85, like a U85 grade or 90 or something, in this big display case where he's like all set up, like unassembled, you know, in like how that company. What the fuck are they called? Collector's Archive. Collector's Archive something. But they do that. They started doing it first with like the pegs and kind of like how they would display the weapons and stuff, instead of how AFA did, just taping them on the inside like they used to. And now AFA kind of copied them.
Collector's Archive Services.
Yeah, so
CAS.
CAS. So CAS, I sent it to them, and they do such a good job with their display pieces that I sent it to them, and they have all the weapons, you know, displayed in the way that they do, where they're like kind of vacuformed kind of into a spot, and the figure's like all broken apart with his head, his body, his two arms, his legs, like all spread out. It's very nice piece, very nice, and it's like a one of one. One of my favorite pieces. It's in my living room. And somebody's going to have to pry that out of my cold, dead hands.
That definitely does check both of those boxes at once.
Yeah,
sure.
Weird. Cool.
Congratulations.
Yeah, rare. Yeah, that, and I have like it'd be like the second card from Return of the Jedi. It's like the desert scene of Boba Fett. Graded, AFA graded, but it's a 60, but I think I should have it regraded because it's literally like perfect, and the only thing that's wrong with it is a hanger tear that isn't even noticeable from the front. You can only see that the hanger tear is from the back, because when they put it in the case, they like laid it perfect on top of where it ripped, and it's underneath that flap that holds the card straight at the top of the case.
Oh, I got
so it looks like a mint AFA graded Boba Fett, Return of the Jedi Fett, but it got a 60, and it's like an 85 figure, 80 card. The bubble's perfectly clear. Everything's perfect about it, but that hanger tear. And I
feel like he got somebody on a bad day or something.
Yeah, I've talked to the guys at AFA at like San Diego Comic-Con and gone by the booth with pictures of it. And they're like, yeah, send it in. The worst that you'll get is the same grade. But to me, I don't know if the grade matters. It was just the opportunity to get one that was perfect. Like, I didn't think I would ever be able to get one like that. And I got this maybe 15 years ago. So I think I got it for like $600 or maybe $700. But it was, at the time, I kind of convinced my wife, like, this is a once-in-a-lifetime thing. I'll never be able to find another one that's like this clean for such a cheap price that looks so good. Like, and the only thing that has against it is this hanger tear and kind of a shitty grade, you know? But, so that's my other, like, prized piece, I guess. And then I kept, like, the paint masters of all my handmade figures. So they'd be like the first piece that I casted out of the mold and assembled and painted. And then all my other, like the whole edition I made, whether it be 25, 50, 100, 2, 3, 400, some figures I made so many editions of. But I would be copying that first one that I did. And I have all those too.
That's got to be awesome.
That's awesome.
I think I didn't you not too long ago, weren't you going through some of those original ones
and yeah,
jettisoning some of
them? Yeah, I got rid of some of, like, in the last year, I kind of dedicated my life, I suppose, to Phantom Starkiller IP and like my original IP, I suppose, like my own shit, and not making any more like pop culture figures. Cause if my own creations are getting me where I want to go, I don't think I need to focus on other people's creations anymore. So I kind of made that decision, like late 2019. And so that's kind of when I decided, like, I started kind of cleaning house of some of the things that, you know, I mean, yes, they have some kind of sentimental value to me that I made this thing years ago. And, you know, but there's guys who have these great collections of my stuff, and to have something like that would be like, I was just describing these crazy things I collect and I like, and I want, to me, you'd have to pry it out of my cold dead hands. To somebody else, that thing that I'm just walking past every day, that's collecting dust that I made 7 years ago, that might have been the first thing that they saw that introduced them to this weird, wacky world of bootleg figures. And then they started collecting things, and then they started making things. Then they met a friend, and now there's some guy that they've been talking to online is their best friend. And it all started because this fucking Franken Fett figure I made, and they happened to see on Facebook, because some group in Thailand posted it on a Facebook group. And now he's got the chance to buy that figure. Like, to me, that means more that he has it than I do, you know? And it does get crazy like that, guys. I mean, that's like a real example. I wasn't just making that up, but that's true. Yeah. So, I mean, it's kind of wild how this art scene has inspired so many and made so many lifelong friendships for people, and the how far it's taken me to where this is, you know, been my job for the last 10 years almost, that I've been doing this, pursuing my art full time. And, you know, so it's all very moving and touching, you know, and I think it's a good thing that people are doing this, and that, you know, I'm happy that I started doing it, and it all, happen from collecting toys.
Well, even, you know, people who now make toys because of you, you know, like that's another kind of awesome kind of thing to think about.
Yeah, it goes, it's pretty wild because there's like generations of guys that have started making toys or that have been toy makers. I would be like considered like a first generation guy. And then there's guys that I inspired that started making toys that are no longer doing it, that inspired guys and inspired guys. And it goes, I don't even know. You'd have to talk to somebody like Dove from DKE Toys, who is kind of maybe a, like more of a historian, I suppose, on the resin bootleg game. But it's, you know, there's guys that are that their first figures at New York Comic Con, or not their first one, but they have their first release at Dove's booth at DKE Con this weekend, that, you know, maybe some guy that started 5 years after me that was inspired by four guys before me that all inspired each other. Like, it's so wild how it's just kind of grown into this worldwide art scene, you know?
So, just before we wrap things up, where can we find you on the internet? And, is there anything that you'd like to plug? Go for it.
So yeah, you can find me at Killer Bootlegs on Instagram or Twitter or Facebook, or Phantom Star Killer on Instagram, or, you know, phantomstarkiller.com or killerbootlegs.com. I got some new thing I'm doing every week, multiple things. So just as long as you're following those accounts, and, you know, I'll be posting and sharing and all the progress that goes on with all these cool projects I'm working on.
And we'll, of course, be doing our due diligence to share everything that we see, you know, on our feed. We, you know, we have nothing but the utmost of respect for you, what you're doing. You know, it really is art, and we love it. You know, we're inspired by it, and you know, we can't wait to see what's coming next. So, Peter, thank you so much for joining us tonight, and it has been a hell of a weekend for you, and get some rest.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. I've been following you guys, and I love what you guys are doing, and I'm happy to be a part, and anytime you guys want me to come back and talk about any of this goofy stuff that goes on, I'm happy to, more than happy.
We live for the goofy shit, man. We live for it.
Me too.
It's the best.
It's definitely like a weird movie that I don't understand what's going on sometimes. I'm like walking in halfway through it, you know, and it's in French, and I'm just enjoying the ride, you know?
Enjoying the ride. That's a good way to send it off.
Thank you, dear listener, for hanging out with us today. Subscribe, rate, and review us wherever you listen, and then tell your friends to do it. Thanks also to Joe Azari, the golden voice behind our intro. Our music is Game Boy Horror by the Zombie Dandies. Find more about them both in our show notes.
Follow us on social media at AIC_podcast on Instagram and Twitter. Stop by and say hi, show us your toy hauls, and share your toy stories. Maybe we'll talk about it in a future episode.
Don't try this at home. Void where prohibited and some assembly required. Each sold separately, not a flying toy. Consult a physician if your toy run exceeds more than 4 hours.
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.